scary.
Streaming in this realm and beyond, you're listening to Paranormal Investigator Radio with your hosts, Peter Leonard, Rich Nicodem, and Dr. David DeProspero.
Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. David DeProspero is in the house tonight for a flaming new episode of Paranormal Investigator Radio.
It never gets old.
Flaming?
Flaming.
That's probably not a good
Where
choice
you going
of
with that?
Hi, guys.
Well, sizzling hot, you know. I had to take my earphones off because my ears are sweating.
That's okay. That's okay. My microphone just hit me in the head, so we're okay.
So this is the Three Horsemen, the original three from Paranormal Investigator Radio.
I know. This
the
is
the very first episode.
This is a memorable event. I haven't been here in 9 months almost.
Dear Lord, it's been nine months since we've had a real topic.
It's been a long semester.
No chicken pen with everybody sitting around watching, putting their 2 cents in.
We don't even have a question from a call-inner. But if you want to call in, 1-888-429-5471. The phone lines are open throughout the universe. 1-888-429-5471. Thank you.
All right.
We had an interesting weekend. We participated in Rome, New York's first Paracon.
That was a unique event.
E for effort. I'm glad we had the opportunity to set up.
Was there a real Bigfoot?
I didn't look. I just couldn't bring myself to stick my head through a tent to look at something. But David braved it.
I did.
And what was it?
It was instantly terrifying. And then you had to think about it for a while to figure out what it was. And then once you figured out what it was, it became very apparent that it was a large papier-mâché three-dimensional foot. Very large.
So that's what they wanted people to come and make donations.
There was a sign. It was cute. There was a sign above it that said, so now you've seen it, please donate to the American Cancer Foundation or something like that. But they had it set up like a military tent screen with, you know, green. And it looked like it was some kind of expedition blanket covering a display booth. And you lift it up and there was a gigantic papier-mâché.
See, it got us thinking for future events, Rich. What we'll do, we'll set the same kind of tent up, except we'll have Mike behind there naked. And if that doesn't scare people...
That's terrifying in itself.
You know, the sad thing was that it was the first of its kind event for Rome. And, of course, Rome is not a large demographic. And we all know that even though we are the Rome investigators of the paranormal, we don't do a lot in Rome because of the fact that you get very low attendance at stuff. And this was one of those cases where there was a lot of people there, participant-wise, that came from quite a ways away. And after the first maybe 4 or 5 hours of Friday evening, they just packed their stuff up and left.
There were actually vendors who left the first night, didn't come back?
Yeah, there were teams that quite were from quite a ways away that had scheduled presentations
like
and whatnot.
How far away?
There was the Bigfoot researcher guy who was stationed out of Albany but came up from Kentucky.
Really?
So he left and went back to Albany, I guess.
Wow, on Friday night, the first night. Wow,
A couple of them were New Yorkers, but they didn't want to pay for the hotel room and just braved it and drove home. And
they must have did that because they felt that there was no participation there.
Well, the thing was that on Friday night, everybody was supposed to be set up by a certain time. So when I got there at 5 and when Pete got there at 5, the perimeter of the auditorium was set up and largely manned, I guess. But all of the central vendors, there were probably another 15 tables in the center, had nothing. They said that some people had already left by that time. A lot of people hadn't shown up, but they were going for it.
But see, this is a, and Rich, you could probably chime in here too. It seems that paranormal events are down across the board, but what I actually didn't like about this too, the two psychics that they had featured and promoted never even showed up. And it must have been one of these things that people didn't pre-buy tickets, so they just didn't even bother showing up, which I think is not good business.
No, that's very amateurish to put on a convention and do that. And I'm not saying anything negative towards the organizers of the event, but that's like mistake 101 when it comes to these events. I didn't go. And I'm kind of happy I didn't, based on the attendance and some of the information I got over the weekend. But, you know, it is what it is.
I did get my first tattoo, so it was an experience.
Pete and I did get a tattoo.
That I saw on Facebook.
A donut, but it was only temporary. And it smelled delicious. It smelled like chocolate.
Oh, see, I didn't even smell it.
Yeah. But, you know, Rich, that all goes back to that old standby motto that if you commit yourself to something, you do it. And those psychics, even though they may not have had guaranteed sales or whatever, you know, if we get booked at a place or if we have an event that we have to be at, we're going to be there no matter what.
Rule number one, we don't cancel.
Yeah, you have to be there. You have to show up. You have to honor your commitments.
Absolutely. Well, that's a shame. It really is. The problem is so many people try to put these events together and think they're a simple process, and it's not.
Yeah.
There's a technique in marketing these things that some people are good at and some people are not. The first Scaracuse, I don't want to call it Scaracuse, Scaracuse, was very lackluster. However, you know, there was a few hundred people that showed up,
mm-hmm.
and everyone was paid. But going into it the first time, he knew that was going to happen. So he made an investment. Well, he filled up just about every booth up. And then when we did it at ScaraCon at the casino, and then it really took off. And no vendors left.
Yeah,
I mean, the whole time we were there. I mean, obviously you have some celebrities that cancel. I mean, they get picked up for a movie deal or something. That's part of the landscape that happens. But, I mean, you guys are at ScareCon. You've seen it a couple of years. It was, like, super busy. We could barely walk down the aisle.
15,000 people, 10,000 people, whatever.
Right. But that had, you know, that had probably about, $100,000 worth of celebrities there,
right.
too. I mean, that
right.
was a little bit different creature. But the thing is that the organization of the event... And the problem is, if I was a vendor and I'm going to spend money to come to a conference, and I get there and I'm that disappointed the first night and I just leave.
Within 5 hours or
Yeah. I mean, think about it.
Yeah.
I mean, you're like, I don't want to spend the extra like $75 for the hotel.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah. And essentially, again, it really comes down to marketing. And
the problem we run into all the time with these paranormal events, no matter whether it's RIP events or lectures or our summer tours and stuff, marketing is always the gigantic downfall of all of these events. Effective marketing takes money. And when you don't have
right.
thousands of dollars to buy TV ads or newspaper ads or radio ads for a single run, what are you limited to? Facebook, maybe Craigslist?
Well, there's some... Pete's actually pretty crafty when it comes to this. There are a lot of ways that you can market an event without spending a lot of money at all. And Pete's learned a few, I've learned a few, and we've done them for our events and we picked up people. It's just you got to have the knowledge and the ambition to go out and research it and do it. But, I mean, events aren't easy.
Nope.
You know, I mean, people think I'm going to have an event and make a lot of money and just do it once a year and that's how I'm going to pay my bills for the entire year.
Nope.
I mean, that would be wonderful. And yeah, Comic-Con probably does that. But Comic-Con took like 25 years to get there. You know what I mean? And, you know, a lot of people just kind of... But there's a lot of conferences that I thought were decent that aren't around anymore. What's the one that you were going down to in April down in Gettysburg area?
Phenomenology.
Yeah, that's done.
That was a big name convention for a long time there.
But that was a... How do I want to put this lightly? That ended up being a screw job. That wasn't that. The convention wasn't successful. That was a partnership problem that ended up financially ruining one partner and the other one benefiting exponentially from it.
I've always said, you got to be cautious who you go in business with. You know what I mean?
But they are having this year a reunion one. I believe it's next May.
Really?
So if you guys want to go, I can look into it.
Yeah, I'm in for anything Gettysburg.
Anything Gettysburg?
I've actually never been to Gettysburg.
If you go with Pete, it's an eye-opening experience.
But the problem is every time they do this conference, it's during a weekend in April that I'm going to a conference myself.
Yeah.
And it has been that way because John Zaffis and Dustin and all those guys, hey, why don't you come down? I can't. I'll be in Minnesota. I'm usually either in Minnesota or Wisconsin. That same weekend,
yep.
almost every single year. And then they shifted the date, and then, of course, the conference that I go to shifts the date, and so it's the same weekend.
And that was the weekend that we were in SalemCon.
Yes.
Wasn't it? Yeah, so we were at another convention in Salem. Yeah. Yeah,
I think they move it according to Easter. I mean, I know right. that sounds funny, but it always... Because, like, one phenomenology was March, then it was in April, then there was a May, and then there was...
Yeah, I'd love to go to more of these paranormal conferences myself, but they always seem to fall the same weekend that I've got a convention that I go to, so...
We'd love to get drunk with you in Salem. Salem is awesome.
Great. That's fantastic.
Actually, Gettysburg is quite the happening place now with the paranormal.
Yeah, we had some exciting times in Gettysburg.
I don't know, Pete. We got pretty drunk that one night at the Hulbert House with John Zaffis.
Yes.
On that Red's apple cider there.
Oh, dear God.
That was my first Red's.
Wow.
That's fantastic stuff. If you like Reds, 1-888-429-5471.
Yeah, you guys left me upstairs in the third floor. Somebody said, let's go up and do some EVPs and spirit box stuff. So we all went up there. And the next thing I knew, I fell asleep. I woke up. There's no one there. Now, to be left alone on the third floor by yourself.
It's peaceful, isn't it?
I mean, without a flashlight or anything?
No, thank you.
Those dolls?
No, yeah.
It's kind of creepy.
But just one thing to close out the Paracon thing, and this is a good piece of advice because I know you're involved in the business. We actually got a quick education. One of our associate members there, Adam Moore with Twisted Ink, was doing tattoos. Now, he had a steady flow of people all weekend. He made
a lot of money. Yeah.
Tattoos drive people in.
They
tattoos
do.
Are like the new thing. Everyone wants to get a tattoo. And the best thing about some people... keep getting them over and over a few a year until eventually,
business.
10 years from now, there's going to be no skin left
that
isn't inked.
And his assistant, she said to us, you know, why didn't anybody come to this? You know, and we had the same talk we just had about marketing. She's like, well, why doesn't he hire a younger kid? Someone like me, I could put it on Snapchat, this. And she's naming off like 30 things I've never heard of. So I wouldn't even begin to market it.
Snapchat is huge.
Well, Snapchat is, but there's so many social media outlets now that, you know, in the computing field, I've never heard of half of these things that she was saying. And it, like Pete and I were talking about, it would probably be a full-time job to have somebody keep up on marketing an event like this from the initiation to the actual event on all of those various threads of media.
Well, you people in the computer side of things are more concerned with apps that are more technical oriented. How can they basically analyze Wi-Fi signals around me? How can Google keep my calendar?
Yeah, I couldn't care less about Snapchat.
In the entertainment industry, in the event industry, social media is a big thing because it is a free way to connect with people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's huge for us. And there's days that I'm just like, I want to shut all my social media stuff off. I'm like, I'm just sick of having to report everything I do and put it on Facebook or Twitter or whatever. But then again, I mean, it's really helped us in the past with events.
It sure has, absolutely.
You know, and now you can do that whole video streaming thing. So
which
you
we
can,
did.
They're going to regret that.
You can stream while you're right there at the event to people. So, you know, things get going at your conference. And you can start streaming stuff to people, and you can see it, and they can grab their keys and run out the door and come to your event.
Yep.
So it's never too late with the social media stuff. Everyone's on social media.
Mm-hmm.
Well, except Dave.
Yeah.
But do you know there's a bigger one now that I never heard of? It's called Periscope, where you can live feed these videos?
That's Twitter.
That's Twitter?
Periscope is the video version of Twitter.
Yeah.
See, I didn't know that.
I know about Periscope because they got in trouble a while ago because they were streaming Game of Thrones. People... you know, held their phone up to their TV and allowing the entire world to watch Game of Thrones for free. So that was a huge HBO. They got into a big lawsuit with Periscope about
Let's
that.
Let's not forget Instagram.
Instagram, yep.
Pinterest, there's something with the B too, isn't there? Like a bee and then there's a turtle. I mean, I honestly
Vine,
don't know.
There's Tumblr, there's, they're just...
But see, I see Facebook becoming topics with pictures. It's like, I don't even think Facebook does the job anymore because we post things and nobody really even looks at the stuff anymore. It's
the
more
weirdest
just,
thing will get hundreds of views, but an actual valid announcement of something, 6, 7.
See, I put up the fundraising thing that we're doing for the Rome Historical Society. We got 38 views.
Yeah.
I put a thing up yesterday about bald squirrels and nobody knows what kind of animal they are. It's like 1,800 views.
Yeah.
It's like, what is...
Yeah, there's no rhyme or reason to it.
And the other thing which is important about these events, particularly in our area, is people don't buy advance tickets anymore.
No.
People don't know what they're doing until a few days out before the event. And singles of concerts, I talked to someone who books some stuff at some casinos, and they're like, we used to like list a show and it would sell out, boom, that was it. Now it's like they're advertising on the radio constantly, week after week, get your tickets, because people just aren't rushing out the door.
Yeah.
They're like, I'll get to it whenever, because we don't have all this disposable income like we used to have.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to make every dollar count, and we're balancing things out. We're going to see what's going to happen over the next couple weeks. And obviously some of these paracons, I'm sure the Crypto Paragon was very expensive to go to. But then
$8,
again,
I think.
Okay. But then again, there's time. It's the weekend.
Yeah.
Right? People like work all weekend and it's also weekend. And you know, how many people really have the free time to go to a paracon on the weekend? Basically when there's people that no one knows.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Now if you bring a big draw in, then that becomes a different story.
Yeah.
But
now like that Adam who was doing the tattoos, he booked all of these tattoos in advance and said on Saturday and Sunday, I'm not going to be at my studio. I'm going to be at the Crypto Paracon, so just show up there and I'll tattoo you there. So
genius.
His draw of people was basically the only influx of people to the event. So that was a very good marketing technique on his part.
Right. But, and of course, Rome is an older demographic.
Yeah.
There's not a young populace in that area. And a lot of the older demographic think all this shit is hogwash and crazy and garbage, and so they don't really follow it, you know? And that's, I mean, how many, when you go to ScareCon, how many older people did you see there other than escorting their grandkids or, you know, somebody like that?
Yep.
But see, there's valid advice out there from Rich. If you're planning a Paracon, check your demographic and also take a good look at your marketing. Because to even attempt anything in our area, you would have to outdo ScareCon. And unless you have a bankroll bigger than the promoters doing ScareCon, like Rich said, dumping, what, maybe $100,000, $150,000 on celebrities, you're really not going to compete with them. And the difference is, this probably will come off insulting, there's the reality television stars, which comprise most of the paranormal conferences. But then there's an event like ScareCon, which has that, but then they also have the movie people, the movie the icons.
Well-known icons.
The people who've played Jason or whatever the genres are, or like Adrian Barbeau. Like the first one there had Star Trek people. You had Chaskay Spencer, the guy from Twilight. I mean, you're bringing in people that are in big blockbuster things that are hitting across multiple genres, not just paranormal or horror, and it's like, okay,
yeah,
well,
have a mix of everybody coming.
I was on an episode of WKTV's Dinner Time at 6. Oh, okay, well, this lady made 15 movies that were in national theaters.
Yeah.
I mean,
I can't tell you how many paranormal groups contact me. This is going back maybe
again, no insult.
4 or 5 years ago. There was this big influx of paranormal groups. They're all over the place. They dress in, like, you know, rock gear, rock clothing with, you know, chains hanging down their pockets with leather coats, and they all did like rock star poses and stuff. They're like, they thought they're the new, you know, the new superstars, the rock stars, you know, the paranormal. And all these groups would send me stuff to represent them. And I'd be like, should I know you? Yeah, I did one episode of Paranormal Challenge. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I need an agent. I need bookings. You don't need an agent. You need a full-time job. You know, and it went on for like a year, then all of a sudden it just ceased. I mean, the number of paranormal groups 5 to 6 years ago, it was so much more than it is now. There's been a huge decline in groups.
But also look at the TV shows, those type of reality TV shows. You don't see hardly any paranormal TV shows now. You have Taps, and you have Ghost Adventures.
Yeah. And Ghost Brothers, which I have to say is absolutely horrible.
Okay, that
it's everything I knew it was going to be.
Taps isn't long for TV much longer. You know, basically, people are seeing it coming. You can only go so many seasons.
Right.
Destination America has, not to interrupt, I'm sorry, Rich. Destination America has replaced sci-fi as far as paranormal. It's all sci-fi, paranormal pretty much all the time.
They needed a niche that no one else had, so what the hell are we going to do? Let's do paranormal.
Yeah.
But the thing is that there used to be, like, I mean, in the state of New York, there must have been thousands of groups at one time.
Oh, yeah.
And now there's probably, I'd be surprised there's even 100 now. I mean, people just, it's not what they think it's going to be. You know, they think it's going to be exciting, they're going to be doing investigations every week, and they're going to see demons, and then when it comes down to it, it's a lot of just waiting and basically hanging out, asking questions, and using equipment that may or may not do something, and they're just like, yeah, this sucks, I don't want to do it anymore.
But, you know, even the paranormal, like most other things in life, in order to really find success and longevity, you have to be able to pivot. And all businesses end up pivoting, paranormal groups end up pivoting as well. I mean, look at us. We started out specifically doing home client cases. And now, all these years later, we are dominantly doing philanthropic fundraisers for historic events, public fundraisers for presentations. We're doing the city tours. We still have a fair caseload of private homes, but
the legitimate stuff has fell off the face of the earth, too, as far as getting phone calls. Like, I was just, we got one over the weekend. I showed them to David, and I gave it to another local team. It was this lady, she's claiming that she's being raped every night by two ghosts, and then she's getting, like, specific about it, and it's like, okay.
They're sticking things in my, okay,
they
that's
were
a
very,
no,
very
it was very,
emails were graphic.
Well, I'll call somebody for you. But it seems that There's a certain percentage of cases that reach out expecting, you know, assistance right away.
Mm-hmm.
We reach out to them in a very prompt manner, and then they just kind of, like, you know, push us aside. You know, they're like, all right, well, okay, let me, I'll get back to you. And this goes on, and you chase them down for a week or so, and it's like, I got better things to do with my time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you need some help, you know where to find us.
Yeah.
And there's those. I mean, this one woman gave me this story of, like, a gentleman in her trailer. He's following around, and he's like, you know, they see him, and they go outside, and he's in the windows watching, and all this kind of stuff. And then, you know, they're freaked out, and I'm thinking, oh, my God, they need somebody there right away. And then, well, I don't know, I got this going on right now. Oh, I'll have to let you know.
Clearly, it's not
And then they just basically just, you know, just let it fall by the, you know, it's not worth it, you know. You can only help people who want to be helped.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, everyone you went to last year, I didn't really do any last year, but Rich would give us the downloads, pretty much people trying to break their lease or something. Like, you need to prove I got paranormal activity so I could get out of my lease.
Oh, yeah, well, that's horrible. Last year, we had a lot of that, didn't we? And it started the year before, but it really came down to it. It's like, do you own this place or are you renting? Oh, I'm renting. I need to know there's ghosts in here. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then those are the places we found nothing.
Yep.
Almost every single place, we found absolutely nothing.
I took a hiatus after that one where I'm pretty sure the guy wanted to use us in a murder. He was going to murder his family and use the paranormal thing as some kind of psychotic defense or something. I really believe he was going to do that.
Yeah.
So what word of advice out there be, you know, think beyond the cool and the exciting. Like, oh, my God, I get a chance to go try out this new multimeter thing. These people are going to use you. That's pretty much the way of the world now.
You have to be well-versed in psychology, sociology, parapsychology, every ology there is to understand.
Once the wife said he sleeps with two loaded 9mm guns under his pillow, and she feared for her life, I'm like, we're not going to your house.
Yeah.
We'll meet you in a public place.
Yeah.
Mafia style, where I'm near the door.
And unfortunately, there's a lot of teams out there who are younger, and they don't necessarily have the worldly experience to say, hey, red flag should be going off about this. They do have that mentality. Cool, we have a case. Let's bring all of our gear. Let's use it as a training exercise. You know, I mean, you're walking into somebody's house. You don't know. It could be dangerous.
You know, there were a few we sent the girls of Rip into some sketchy neighborhoods. I felt bad after they'd come back and are like, oh, my God, you know, we were afraid to get out of the car. Well, you should have left then. Never sacrifice yourself for
the paranormal.
The paranormal.
You don't want to become what we're looking for.
I think it's perseverance and longevity. I think you stay involved in something long enough, you always have a crowd of people, and the crowd of people thins out.
Yeah.
And as time goes by, and then more thin out, and then more thin out. There's not a lot of scientifically based organizations like ours have been around for a long time
They're not very flashy. This is our team.
Yeah.
This is what we do. You need help, you call us. The other ones, like, what was that one where I looked at? Was it Ghost Raiders or something? They all got their hats flipped up, and they're like, what's up, boy? You know, and it's like...
Breaking into everywhere they go.
And they're posing and stuff, and I'm like, yeah. I mean, going back to trying to be the next hip-hop act or the next, you know, rock group, they all try to dress up and look like they're badass. It's like, that's not the message or the image you should be conveying to people.
Right.
They just want to go in and investigate and basically try to come up with some cool stuff is a rush, you know, and then when they get bored with that, they're done, and that's that, you know. There's no sense of real entitlement to help people, you know.
And there's another aspect of it that bothers me, and I can't remember how I was thinking about this, but I thought of it this weekend. Oh, from a group that was at the Paracon, and we were mentioning that as a homeowner, it might be scary to have a group like this come into your home, and there has to be a modicum of respect. And you have to know your limits and boundaries when you go into somebody's home. Like, for example, on TV shows, whatever, you've seen people go into somebody's home, sit or lay on somebody's bed, do their questions. You know, you're all over somebody's couch. I've seen people go into somebody's refrigerator to get a bottle of water. I mean, there has to be some kind of limit there, respect. You're in somebody else's home. This is not your home. They probably don't want you rifling through their stuff or on their furniture or in their refrigerators.
No.
And again, that comes with a little bit of age and experience that you kind of develop those boundaries.
I think so. I mean, I think there are probably a lot of immature paranormal groups out there.
Yeah.
I'm sure there are.
Yeah.
You know, maturity is something that comes with experience, not necessarily with age. And I'm sure there's a lot of them out there. And they want to go in and they want to ghost hunt. They want to try out some come up with some really cool stuff to scare you. You know, it's kind of one of those thrill-seeking things, like people bungee jump and all that. They also do the paranormal to try to, you know, get grabbed or touched or scared. And then when it kind of loses its shine, you know, it becomes kind of dull. They just kind of get out of it. And that's fine. You know, no harm, no foul. I mean, any group that we've talked about tonight, I'm sure, has done some reputable work. It's just, I'm more concerned about how they present themselves image-wise. I look at them like, there's some people I just would not let into my house.
Right, and that's what I'm saying.
Investigate, you know what I mean? Being a little bit older, I'd want a mature group of people who look to me like they're experienced and done this. Few times
professional queen
professional
together.
You know, basically, you know, they're not going to conjure up a demon
right.
this kind of stuff, you know, different strokes for different folks.
Yep.
You know, it's all good, but again, I mean, a lot of those paranormal groups that I've heard of, I'm sure some of them are still alive or are around, but I'm sure many of them don't exist anymore. They just disband.
The other thing is trends in the paranormal. We have seen how over the past 2 years there's been a huge trend toward demons, where everything now is a demon. It's a trendy thing to go seeking out demons, whereas maybe 5 years ago or even 10 years ago, just having ghosts was the trendy thing. And did you already bring up the Vatican or any of that stuff in previous topics?
No.
Do you mind if we chat about that for a second?
Could I just jump in quick?
Please,
one thing? To quote the movie Kingsman, manners maketh the man.
That's right.
That's all you need to know when you're going someone's home.
Great movie, great quote. So the Vatican, several years back, started this program, understanding that the world has suddenly developed this preoccupation with demons. Inside the Vatican, there is a division that deals with demonology and exorcism. And exorcism is a valid right in the Catholic Church, and it is actually something that the priests perform, and there is a department dedicated to this. The Vatican realized that there's such a fascination with this particular topic that they actually publicly announced that, yes, we do have this division, and guess what? We're opening it up for 14 days once a year for the public from around the world to come and take courses from our Vatican priests on demonology and the rite of exorcism. So the very first year, there was a large turnout. The second year, even bigger turnout. The third year, once they realized that this, you know, actually existed, the event sold out in minutes. And they allow about 400 people to join this program. And it's a week-long seminar of different classes, different schedules each day. And for a person to attend this, they can be a lay person. That means not a priest or a minister or whatever. Or they can be of a particular religious order, a priest or minister or whatever. But the people have to have a letter from their diocesan bishop, whatever the faith is, whatever the denomination, advocating for that person to join the program. So aside from the application fee, or the application, aside from the entry fee, they also have to have this note provided to the Vatican from the diocese. So this is actually a real world thing that is going on, that happens. And the reviews of this program, now in its 7th or 8th year, I think, are just absolutely phenomenal. Last year I wanted to attend it, but as I was leading up to the date, I forgot the date that it started, that they started selling tickets, bam, it was sold out. So it happens in April every year, and I've been on the website almost every day looking for the starting date for 2017.
Let me know, we're going to do it.
I truly want to go to that. That sounds fascinating.
Because then you'd have some kind of legitimacy, unlike most of the demonologists that have no experience or have never worked with the church. You can at least say, well, I attended, is it the Pontifical Academy, or is that a different...
No, it's a different thing. This, I can't remember what the organization is, but it's
is in, it in English?
It's in Italian. For an additional fee, you can have a set of headphones and a simulcast in English and Spanish.
Si, señor Demon.
And you said, what is it, a 10-day program, or...?
It's something
2 weeks?
It's less than that. It's less than that.
And what is it that they teach you? What is the outcome? Or what are you going to walk away with?
Stuff you shouldn't ever want to learn.
Well, because it's the Vatican, its dominant focus is the Catholic Church's perspective on demons and the rite of exorcism. So there's a whole track devoted to demonology in terms of the history of demonology, the identification of demons, the identification of demonic possession. And these are all hosted by priests from the Vatican. And if people don't know this, priests from the Vatican come from a particular series of backgrounds. They have medical doctors that are Vatican priests. They have psychologists that are Vatican priests. They have, you know, a whole lot of professional credentials as opposed to just being a priest. So once they go through the psychology of it and all that, then they move into the exorcism track and the rite of Catholic exorcism, how it's performed, what the outcomes are.
The ritual itself is pretty much unchanged for the past 500 years. I mean, it's a book, it's set in stone, that's pretty much the ceremony. It hasn't changed.
I'd like to know what they think a demon is.
Well,
and I wonder what they would show you, too.
Like. I wonder that, too, because it is interactive. They do have PowerPoint slideshows that are presented with each and every one of these, and there are panel discussions. But knowing what I know about the Catholic faith, I am Catholic, the lineage of their demonic theory is actually a familial lineage. There was, a master demon, then there were... you know, subordinate demons. There's a hierarchy of them. They all have names, which won't be repeated on the air, but...
Leonard is actually the demon of the Hellish Navy, if you didn't know that.
The heck's the Hellish Navy?
Apparently there's a navy in hell, and it's led by a demon named Leonard.
Oh, dear.
So...
I banish you.
Demons are what, fallen angels?
Never human.
Inhuman
entities.
Created by Lucifer?
Well,
that's what you'd hope to learn in this class. What are you... That's part of...
Many of the higher order demons are fallen angels. And the so-called, quote-unquote, sergeants and or lieutenants of those particular fallen angels. I believe there's 11 or 18 key demonic figures in the Catholic faith.
Yeah, my only concern is that the Catholic faith, weren't they persecuting Protestants and burning them at the stake and killing them, stuff like that?
The Inquisition?
Yeah.
That was just Torquemada, but that wasn't under... How do I put? I think the Catholic Church is sort of like the Trump race right now. Like, I mean, I know that's a horrible analogy, but
that's
I think they've convoluted the stories about them so much to make their own agenda come true.
Well,
like the Knights Templar have been vindicated since October 14th, the day after they were all arrested and tried. The Pope issued a bull pretty much releasing them all of, absolving them all of guilt. And that document's been sitting in the Vatican for 700-800 years that nobody ever saw until a few years ago. Like, oh my God, he absolved them of all their crimes. So they really didn't do anything wrong.
And then they were all killed anyway.
But think of this for a second. You're going back to a time when people thought the world was flat. Okay?
Yeah.
You're going back to a time where they thought there were sea monsters.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're going back to a time when astrology was like, you know, I mean, it was it, you know,
yeah.
You follow the star. So you're going back to this very, very old Neanderthalic thinking, but they knew of the hierarchy and everything about the demon, the structure of the demons, which makes me kind of think, yeah, I just think a lot of that is just old Catholic superstition. Now, I do believe, again, I'm a Catholic too. Baptized, confirmed, the whole works. And I do believe, in fact, that, you know, there is God, there is a devil, there are demons. But I don't think the Catholic faith really knows what a demon is. I really don't think, other than just books that they've written about it over, you know, basically, you know, they saw a tree shake and, oh my God, that's a sign of a demon. I don't really think they truly know what it is. However, Pete said something interesting a long time ago about the Ouija board. And he said to me, it's not the board that's the problem, it's the intent, what you're doing with the board. Now, going back to this thing about...
By the way, I have three of them in the office here. Has anything happened?
No. going on to this thing about exorcism, again, I think there is a negative, evil entity. You know, obviously, everything has an opposite. And I think it's maybe it's this prayer that's been defined over, you know, centuries, that is so powerful and brings so much hope that it actually pushes the demon out or exorcises the demon. Versus the actual structure of it, basically it's the hope, the intent of what it's being used for is enough to push this negative entity up. So what I'm trying to say essentially is that, you know, some of this old stuff, I just don't understand how they knew exactly all this stuff. They thought the world was flat. I mean, they just barely invented the wheel, but they knew all the hierarchy of demons and how everything worked. And I have a hard time understanding that, you know. And again, I mean, I could be completely wrong. I believe it, but I just don't know. I believe what they try to sell or teach.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, I mean, Catholic religion's got such a great track record.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? You know, thou shalt not gamble. It's bingo night downstairs at the church.
Mm-hmm.
Father's down there rolling the dice. Come on. Seven. You know? And then they're doing what? What are they doing to altar boys?
Yeah.
I mean, come on. I mean, they say one thing, but they do another.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and maybe it's this whole vow of celibacy, I think, is how can you make a man basically marry God? They're human. You know, there's going to be human
urges.
Urges.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's not like you're an animal or anything. It's your biological composition. It's how you're made. You were made to appropriate, you know, and essentially, you know, I don't know. I mean, these people, I think they would go nuts after a while.
Yeah.
I mean, you know what I mean? And hence the weird crimes that they commit. And, you know, the other thing is the church should realize that they shouldn't have pedophiles be priests.
Well, yeah.
Can I come at you as Pete Leonard?
I'm good with that. Go ahead, Pete.
Pete Leonard, the paranormal archaeologist.
Please.
A couple things here.
It's trademark, folks.
What really fascinated me about the exorcism thing, I studied it for a while, and it scares me. There was a book that was a two-volume series that was put out. Basically an underground training manual for Catholic exorcists. Every time I took that book out to try reading it, I would smell human waste. I would see shadows moving out of the corner. I mean, I'm serious about that. Something doesn't want you to read that book. It's trying to scare you. And that's what going to this class would scare me. Once you're armed with that knowledge, it sort of opens the door. And we always talk about that door. you know what's going on now. And if they start showing you videos of what's really happening or things they've dealt with, you can't unlearn what you've seen.
Yep.
The other thing that scares me,
I don't disagree,
is a couple of years ago, like David was saying, groups need to pivot with the times and things change. And they reworded a lot of stuff in the Catholic Church, and with it was the Roman ritual,
which is the ritual of exorcism.
And this thing, which had been quote unquote working for centuries, all of a sudden didn't work. They issued like an emergency thing. They're like, we need to recall all the rituals. And they reissued the pre-Vatican 1964, the original prayer. So I look at that and say, what the hell isn't working? What was working all of a sudden that doesn't work now? What words did you change that no longer command demons or evil? Now, just based on that education too, the Pope actually has the power to cast the demon out. He stands in light in place of Jesus, and he can literally cast out. He doesn't need to command through the cross, through the power of an exorcism. Like they said a couple times in St. Peter's Square, he apparently had touched people, the current Pope there, had touched people and freed them of demons. That's that. I haven't really studied it, and forgive me, maybe David knows a lot more of this, but yes, you're right, Rich, about most people thinking the world was flat. But I don't think the educated world knew that. Like, the Egyptians knew far more than we'll ever know what the Egyptians knew. The Romans, the Macedonians, the Greeks, they knew a lot more than what we're saying. I think when the split came was the first schism in the church. What was that, about 420, 450-ish? When they fought over... That's when the apostles were married. That's when they had that specific doctrine where they appreciated women, women were accepted, and then they had the split where they went more along, I guess, would that be the Paul version of the Catholic Church versus the Peter version?
Right.
Because Peter had children. They don't ever talk about the children of St. Peter, but I believe one of his children actually became the second pope. Was that Clementus?
That I don't know.
Or something along that could be like Donald Trump conspiracy reading, too, but I don't know about. But he was alleged to have a couple sons and a daughter, which pretty much a Jewish gentleman probably would have back then. But, and I think that's when the total clamping them by the balls, so to speak, came, was that first split where it's like, you're not going to get married. You're going to be submissive to the politics of the church. And they ruled that for 1,000 years after that. And I think they suppressed all the knowledge that was known at the time. And that's probably what the Templars had found. If you're following, like, is it Minnesota? They're finding the Viking artifacts in Minnesota dating back to the early thousands.
Right.
It's like, they were here. This bull cocky that we keep talking about, Columbus finding America.
Oh, yeah.
Columbus sailed well-known Knight Templar routes. He knew exactly where he was going. He didn't not know where America was. And apparently the Vikings knew where America was, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't disagree with any of it. The other thing I think that's important to understand and is that, you know, and this is just based on conversations that I've had with John Zaffis, you can go in with a book of the exorcism and just read it. Nothing will happen.
Right.
You have to have conviction. Again, I think it's the intent. You know what I mean? You have to be a believer of it.
Mm-hmm.
You have to buy into it. You have to do it with a conviction. And I think, again, it's the intent. I think it's the positive willpower of the people conducting this ritual that actually is what probably does it even more so than the actual mm-hmm. words. I think if, like, Andrew Dice Clay sat down and Demas Amingus, I mean, you know, I think it would just get worse.
Yeah.
Versus, you know, somebody coming in and doing who's actually, you know, understands it. But I certainly believe that there is negative, there are demons. I mean, like, there's the sun, there's black holes,
mm-hmm.
there's good, there's evil. I mean, everything has an opposite, mm-hmm. I think, and essentially I think that's what it is. But I do still have a hard time believing that the advanced knowledge that they had in the whole world of demons, basically a long time ago, and here we are now with this, all this technology and breakthroughs we've had, and we haven't got any further in understanding of that.
Yeah.
Nothing new has come up in that study or anything, you know, and it's just, and I know there's a lot of people that are looking into it, but maybe it's the Catholic Church suppressing things because they like to have control of stuff.
They do, and you know, that's well known, that's a fact.
But they're not the only one who does exorcisms.
No, there's lots of different faiths throughout the world that perform exorcisms. From there's tribal groups in Africa that have well-known exorcism rites.
The snake shakers down south.
Yeah, South America. There was a special on the Discovery Channel, I think, about this particular topic. And I think for many of the religions of the world, there are established rituals to cleanse evil. And I'm not going to use the blanket term demons, because demons are not universal through all the religions.
Maybe demons is the Catholic's name for everything.
Right, and it could be. It could be. What I didn't realize, which I learned about just several months back, was that the Vatican has a very, very, very extensive scientific community. There are a lot of really, really well-known scientists, some that were Nobel laureates. They were, you know, considered for a Nobel Prize in the fields of science. The Vatican owns a very well-known astronomy lab, an observatory. Was I telling you, Pete?
Arizona, Utah?
Yeah,
it's one of the biggest in the world, isn't it, for whatever that telescope?
Along with that, they have their own particle collider, nowhere near the scale of CERN or anything like that.
Why do they need a particle collider?
They are exploring what mainstream science is exploring from the perspective that there's some divine creation or origin of it.
The God particle?
Right, or a divine purpose behind
it. You shouldn't be doing that, but you should just believe, and that's it, without question.
I think what they're trying to do is revalidate things from a religious perspective.
This is like a Dan Brown novel.
It's very weird.
I've read all the Dan Brown novels, and there's some that take place in the Vatican, and people said that obviously his stories are fiction, but there's so much accuracy in his descriptions of things.
I want to get into their secret archive.
There's a ton of secret stuff. They have chemistry labs. They have their own military force. You know, there's so many things about the Vatican that are so fascinating and have developed literally over the past, you know, 1,000 years. The scientific end of it is one that particularly fascinates me, obviously, and one that you really don't even think about when you think about the Vatican. If a normal Catholic...
That goes back to Galileo. I mean, they always did.
Yeah.
Scientific research.
But the general populace, when they think of the Vatican, they think of the holy seat of the Catholic Church. It's a large building. That's where the Pope lives. That's where meetings are held. Done. They don't realize that there's such a global force behind it in science, in medicine, in philosophy, in history, literally every mathematics. They have some of the best mathematicians in the world.
No, I completely understand that. They are a global force.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no question about it. But I question some things like, why do they have mathematicians?
Right.
Why do they have chemists? I mean, what things are they digging into? Is it all good? This is a Catholic Church. Who knows what their agenda is?
You don't know.
But, I mean, it is amazing that a religion that's so old and so powerful, I mean, there's no mafia that's as big as... There's no military probably as big...
That's who guards the Pope, right?
The Swiss Guard?
No, the mafia. The guys in the black suits are actually paid mafia.
That's who
guards the Pope.
I didn't know that.
The Swiss Guard or the military.
Yeah.
Those guys you always see in black, as I read that someplace. That's actually the military.
Why do they need a military? Who wants to destroy the Pope and wants to destroy
1848, the Vatican was under siege, and I think they actually lost it at that point. And there was a group of Swiss mercenaries. I forget the exact year. Maybe it was 1860. But
maybe
a group of Swiss mercenaries came in and restored order, and that's why David was mentioning the military, the Swiss Guard. The only people who can be a member of the Swiss Guard are like Swiss men between whatever age it is that served in the Swiss military. No other nation can join the Swiss Guard.
No, it's amazingly, it really is. It's so interesting what they do. And the thing is that, aside from all this very positive stuff that they're doing, there's a very negative side of it, and it is the whole thing about demonic.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe that's why they're also doing all the scientific stuff to understand what that force is.
Mm-hmm.
What it plays, and again, I totally believe it's there. However, I think people kind of hyperextend the thing about a demon. Everybody thinks there's a demon. Oh, there's a demon. Why? I got scratched.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You have a cat in the house? Yes. Okay, demon cat. But again, everyone reaches out to the thing. It's a demon. So like you said about the popularity of things. I mean, some things happen, like when The Exorcist happened.
Mm-hmm.
When that movie came out, there was a big surge in that.
Yep.
I mean, it's all trends. You know, it really comes down to trends and how we can get into people's minds. And, you know, but when I talk to John Zappas, I mean, he lives it. And he's like, oh, Richie, it's so freaking real. The things that I've seen, the things that have happened to me, it's just, I mean, it's true. I'm telling him. And I'm like, the minute I walk in a room and see somebody levitating from the table and their eyes are black, and they start spinning around in circles, sign me up. I'm on board. You know what I mean? Seeing is believing.
Yeah.
And that's why I believe in the paranormal. I mean, there's that layer that people don't believe exists that I'm fully a believer of now because I saw it from my own two eyes. The evidence that I've gathered, or the findings, technical, to me is evidence of it. And so if I can believe in that, then I can believe in one other level above that. That there is, you know, negative entities. Though I think most of the time, Pete and I have discussed that if people are jerks in real life,
yeah,
jerks in death,
yep,
that's probably most of the negative entities that we come across. But the best story ever is when we did that Waterville investigation, where that group came in and said that they had a psychic with them. Gotta love this. That in the closet upstairs, remember this, Pete, was a gateway to hell.
Mm-hmm.
So they saged it.
There's always a gateway to hell.
Burning an herb is going to shut a gateway to hell, apparently.
The sage has been around for a while. Saging a house is one of those well-known practices. And the same thing with burying religious metals on property will seal the property. And
Salt.
You know, there's various...
But closing a gate to hell?
Yes, I know. I understand. I don't particularly like the smell of burning sage, so I avoid it, but...
You're telling me one of the most powerful evil creatures out there in the whole world can be stopped dead in his tracks by burning
by burning
a weed.
Yeah.
I tell you that all the time and tell people the same thing. If you look in the context that you need a priest to drive a demon out and you're standing there with a bunch of burning parsley, it's probably not going to end well for you.
Yeah.
The name of the book is Hostage to the Devil by Malachi Martin. I believe it's 11 cases of true exorcisms that he did, and
really?
That will frighten the hell out of you.
We just got a bleep.
We're on 3-minute warning.
Oh, okay.
I definitely got to get a copy of that. Send that information to
me. Yeah, Malachi Martin is...
And that's when he was one of 14 exorcists for the Vatican, and now there's, what, about 1,400 in a matter of 20 years?
Yep.
So it shows you business is booming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
maybe not in a positive way either.
No.
There's a reason why they do all this pre-inspection before they actually do an exorcism.
That's right.
And weed out probably, you know, 3/4 of them in mental illness or somebody being duped or whatever.
Yeah.
It's not, again, not like Hollywood leads you to believe, but
no.
As you were talking about the cleansing there, I was laughing because I'll close out with Paracon again. Groups that we've have a good rapport with that we've seen year after year, we're pretty much friends and we get along with each other. And then there's that one newcomer that tries to come into the group, and as soon as they start telling me about how they're doing cleansings,
oh,
and it's
goodness.
Just like, please stop talking.
Yeah.
Do you just nicely say, just please get the hell away from me, I don't want to talk to you, or just let them...
We had a guy come up to us who said that the priest couldn't show up to the house, so it was up to him to perform the house blessing and the cleansing and the deliverance and all that. And he said he was reading from the Bible and people were throwing up, and well, we just sat there and, you know, politely nodded and smiled.
Stop.
And stuff.
Come
yeah.
on.
No, and it wasn't like a 1-minute story.
No,
it was like 18 minutes. It's
yeah.
like, oh my God.
Yeah.
I know, I'm sorry I left you there. I told
Thank
him I
you.
Had to go pee and I
Thank
just
you.
Left. But it was either that or throat punch him, so
oh,
I figured.
Goodness. Anyway.
Well, we took on the Catholic Church and lost tonight.
We did. But that's okay. It was an interesting
they
evening.
They always win.
Interesting evening.
Our offertorial hymn for tonight will be on page 14 of the Red Blue Missalette. Oh, happy day.
Yep.
Well, I guess Do we have anything coming up? What do we got? Anything?
Rome Lamplight Tours.
Rome Lamplight Tours,
yes.
If you
go to lamplighttours.com, you can see the historic walking tours and the evening paranormal walking tours that are hosted from April, May through August, and then the paranormal ones occur after that.
And next Tuesday, right after Paranormal Investigator Radio on Destination America, Haunted Collectors Season 2, Episode 2, The Haunted Inn, Hulbert House.
Oh, is it on there?
You don't want to miss that.
Peter is on there.
He's almost like Howard Wolowitz was when he came back as an astronaut. You know what's really interesting? Being on the moon.
There's a Mars bar. Here's a Mars bar. I've been to space. All right. Well, no, I gotta give Johnny Sanfis the shout out. It was his show. It's not like I carried the whole episode, but
you did. You carried the whole episode. You did good.
I never forget that day. I couldn't even get in. I went to follow Pete into the Hulbert House. They're like, "Where do you think you're going?"
They blocked poor Rich.
I'm with him. No, you're not. No, I really. I know John Sanfis.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Paranormal Investigator Radio. Be sure to visit us online at paranormalinvestigatorradio.com. Until next time, happy hunting and stay spooky.